Thank you, Tyler. Well, men, it's always good to be together as men. Appreciate you guys coming on such a lovely sunny day. I hear it hasn't rained that much in the area recently, so the Lord decided to give it to us in abundance. I am an Arkansas boy. There you go. Go Hogs. That's right. That's right. They won today. I grew up in the northeast part of the state of Arkansas, just along the Mississippi River, in a part of Arkansas that's just below the Missouri Boot Hill. And I wasn't born there, actually, in Arkansas. I was born in an Army hospital in a U.S. Department of Army hospital in Fort Huachuca, Arizona. My mother, as I mentioned in the message this morning, had been married twice before, and she had lived in Arkansas. She got married at the age of 16 and had a son and gave that son up to the biological father and the father's parents to raise. And then she went into the military and found another relationship, married there, divorced. And by that time, still very, very young, she met my father in Bozeman, Montana. And they married, and he was in the military, and they went to Fort Huachuca, Arizona. And my sister and I were born there. She was born 11 months older than I am. And when I was sort of conscious of things, we were living in Altadena, California. I think they were moving around just to find more income source. And by the time I was 4 years old, my parents divorced. There was a lot of violence and vulgarity in my home. I have a few flashes of it every now and then. And I actually did not see my biological father until 40 years later, when I was 44. I was actually pastoring the Bible Church of Little Rock in Little Rock, Arkansas. And I was going to church to pick up one of my sons who was on a junior high float trip down the Buffalo River, and I was waiting for him and the bus of young children to come back from that trip. And I went and checked my mail in my little mail slot there at the church, and there was a letter from my father communicating for the first time in 40 years. And that came about because in 2004, I was co-authoring a book with Curtis Thomas called The 5 Points of Calvinism, Defined, Defended, and Documented. And someone sent it to my father. I think it was my mother, anonymously. And he had read the book, and he responded with a snail mail letter. You remember those? They were in a little white packet with a little stamp on it. those were in abundance then, but now we would say email. But he wrote it on little sheets of paper in pencil with an address back to me and only a post office box on the return envelope. And so he just sort of reintroduced himself and said, "I've read your book, and I hope to talk to you someday." And he gave a few remembrances of his life with me when I was a baby to age 4. And he did not leave a telephone number or anything else other than a P.O. box. So I tried to find his number, and I found a number, and I called that number several times over the next maybe 3 or 4 weeks, and it kept ringing. There was no voicemail. So I just kept thinking, well, maybe one of these days I can call the number and he would answer. And so I about gave up and thought, well, I'm going to probably just respond to this snail mail with another response in the mail, send it to that P.O. box, and then try to see if I can get some dialogue started. So I was home one day studying, and I said to my wife, I'm going to go ahead and just try one more time, and then if not, I'm going to sit down and write him a response and send it in the mail. And when I called, he answered. And I said, is this Peter Quinn? And he said, yes, it is. And I said, well, this is your son, Lance Quinn. And there was a pregnant pause, maybe 10 seconds, which is a long time when there's a pause. And his next response was, wow. I said, Dad, if I'm not mistaken, it's been about 40 years since there's been any contact. And he said, yeah, exactly 40 years. So we started talking. And we talked for, I think, probably an hour, hour and a half, sort of catching up on 40 years. And one of the last words he said to me was, you know, perhaps at some point we could meet together in person. And I said, I'd like that. And I was telling him about my family, and he was telling me about his. And so we talked. And about a month later, I think it was, my sister called me, and I was at one of my son's basketball games. And she said, she lived in the Little Rock area, guess who's at my house? And I said, well, based on the way you're saying that, I would presume it's our father. And she said, that's right. And he'd like to see you. And I said, well, I'm at a basketball game right now, and it's early on in the game, and my son is playing, and is there any way that you could bring him to this basketball gymnasium so we could see one another? And she said, yes, we're going to do that. We'll be there. So I gave her the address, and she showed up, and I saw him for the first time in 40 years. And he was living in Montana. And he came in his truck with a dog. And he had a big grizzly beard, white. But I remember the pictures. And we started talking. And believe it or not, since he didn't warn me that he was coming, this was a Saturday, I was leaving later on that day for a ministry trip and preaching. And so I only sort of crammed in about an hour or two of dialogue before I had to get on a plane and do some ministry. And he ended up staying, I think, 2 days and stayed with my sister and began talking with my wife and developing a relationship with her. And, of course, he was seeing his 8 children on my side of the family for the first time. And we continued dialogue as we have to this day. I don't believe he's a believer. He talks about Christ, but he talks about a lot of other religions and mainly pop psychology. But we've kept up our dialogue. And when that divorce occurred at the age of 4. My mother was trying to figure out, because she had no marketable skill, no education, she was a 10th grade high school dropout, how to survive. We were in Altadena, California, as I said, and so my mother called her mother, my grandmother, in Arkansas. It's a little bitty town that they were living in that everyone called home. It's Luxora, Arkansas, just a few miles north of Osceola, where my good friend Don Whitney is from. And I lived in Osceola for several years, and Don and I know of one another. And he says, there are three famous people from Osceola, Arkansas: Don Whitney, Lance Quinn, and Dale Evans Rogers. And of course, for you who are younger, you say, I have no idea who the famous lady Dale Evans Rogers is. But some of you older guys would know exactly that she's the wife of Roy Rogers, who, by the way, was baptized by John MacArthur's father, Jack, at Jack's church in Hollywood, California. Roy Rogers and Dale Evans Rogers. So when, at 4 years of age, we divorced and my mom was failing financially, she called my grandmother, who I had not met, and said, can we come to Luxor, Arkansas, which was a tiny town, very tiny. In fact, I generally say Luxor is so small, the city limit signs are on the same post. It's very, very small. And so in 1966, my mother put my sister and me and all we owned, which obviously wasn't much, into a pink Studebaker Lark and drove all the way across the country, deposited us in Luxor, Arkansas. So I moved around all over the state because my mother was always trying to figure out the next job that would eke out the next portion of money that we needed to survive. And so I lived all over the state, including Fordyce, Arkansas, where Jim Eliff and his family were at one time also. So I just keep following all the fine Bible teachers, Jim Eliff, Don Whitney. So my mother, when she was sort of battling with my father in California, a particularly harrowing night of some physical violence between the two of them, she ran across where she was house-sitting for some people who were on vacation who had given her a key to their home to look after it while they were away. And he did not know where she was, and she ran out into the night air, and she ran to this home and opened the door and then slumped behind it as it closed, crying her eyes out. And she prayed. She wasn't a religious person, but she prayed, God help me, God help me. And the next day at our house, the Jehovah's Witnesses knocked on the door. And she believed that that was God's answer to her prayer. So she started to follow the Jehovah's Witnesses. But when that divorce occurred and when we went to Arkansas, she still adhered to that kind of theology but was not active with the Kingdom Hall. So we moved all around trying to eke out a living, very, very poor people. And she started working as a medical record librarian in county hospitals around the state of Arkansas just to try to figure out how to pay bills. So for me, that was tough because I was going from town to town to town every so often, checkering the state and hard to make friends. And so I just got involved in sports to a huge degree and trying to make friends and trying to do well in sports. And my sister, however, became involved in the post-Vietnam era with drugs and alcohol and the kind of things that they do in that culture. And so we couldn't have been any more different. And they had constant battles with each other. They were so much alike, and so they fought with each other. They were both heavy smokers. And I just put all of my efforts into sports and ways to actually just get out of the home. And I was lost. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do. And I just tried to keep my head down. And it was a very violent home. A lot of verbal fisticuffs. and very, very sad living in a home like that. I call it a powerful error. Because when you're in a home like that and you have nothing but fights and cursing and argumentative situations that you didn't want to be a part of, but you were too young to leave and go anywhere, I've learned through the years, and particularly with my own family and with my own children, this is how not to parent. These are all the examples of how not to parent. So don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do it that way. And God actually, in what might seem to you to be a very strange way, taught me how to parent by reverse. I was learning what not to do. The power of error, watching error occur insidiously and recklessly and continuously. I knew what not to do now. And so when I got into high school, just before college, someone gave me a brand new Bible, brand new translation, something called the NIV. It just came out. This was in the late 70s. And I was given that Bible because this friend of mine, high school friend, said, "You're going to college, right? Arkansas State University in Jonesboro, Arkansas." "Yes." "Well, you're going to need this." That's all he said. So I took that Bible with me in a little duffel bag. That's all I had with the car that I was in. And I drove off to Arkansas State University in the fall of 1978. I was lost. I roomed with my cousin, who was also lost. And I began to, in that first fall semester, ask a lot of eternal questions. Prompted, of course, by the Lord. Who am I? What is my life going to be like? What is life all about? What will happen when life ends? What will happen to the life to come, if there is one? Am I prepared? What do I know? What do I not know about all of these impending questions? And of course, I believe the Lord was drawing him to myself, or vice versa, myself to him. And it came to pass that I pledged a fraternity. And within a couple of weeks, I realized what an utter mistake that was, looking at all that they were doing. And that seemed to me to be a direction I didn't need to go. And I think that was also the Lord just steering me clear of that. And so I picked up this Bible that by that time had dust, and I dusted it off. And I started reading, just like you would any book, the New Testament Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They were right at the front, so I'm going to read that. And I started reading about the Gospels, and for maybe about 3 months of that fall first semester, I couldn't tell you when I finished reading anything other than this: Jesus is God. Jesus is God. You cannot do the things that he did, say the things that he said, teach the things that he taught without this man being a supernatural being. And somewhere in about a 6 month period of time, maybe 4 months of the first semester and 2 months of that spring semester, I was converted to Jesus Christ by reading the Bible. 1 Peter, I was born again to a living hope through the seed of the Word of God. No one spoke to me. No one said anything to me. I just read those gospel accounts, and the powerful Christ became real to me. I didn't know any terminology. I wasn't raised in the church. And what I knew about Christianity, or what I knew about religion, was not only that which I didn't understand and didn't know, I knew less than the Bible, because my mom would tell me things that Jehovah's Witnesses believe and teach. And so I had to unlearn the things that she taught in addition to learning the Bible. And so I just started voraciously reading the scripture. I would pray like Dr. Beakey would encourage us to talk to God. I just thought it was a conversation. And one night I was ironing a pair of pants in my dorm room on the 9th floor of the Twin Tower dorm room. It's all closed down now, all torn up, new edifices there. And I was just ironing this pair of pants, and I just said, Lord, I need you to help me by bringing somebody in my life. I need a friend. I need someone to help me understand the Bible. And by the time I finished ironing those pants, there was a knock on the door. And a young man opened the door, and young man said, Hi, I'm David Dickens. I play basketball here at Arkansas State, and I live on this dorm floor, and I'm going to be starting a Bible study this Friday. Would you like to participate? And I said, yes, I would. And I realized when we sat down, because it eventually was just the two of us, that he and I collectively knew nothing about the Bible. So we just started studying together. And we would just read the scripture. And we became very dear friends. There was only one ministry on campus that was really doing anything of a significant sort, and that was Campus Crusade for Christ. And so we kind of hooked up with them and started attending their meetings, and they shouldn't have done it for sure, but they asked me to stand up and to begin to teach the other students. And I look back on it now and thought, I had not one clue about what I was saying. I literally tried to learn a lesson and then turn around and articulate that lesson that I'd just learned hours before. But I think that some of the Campus Crusade staff persons saw something in me that could be honed into being a teacher of God's Word. So I studied the best I could. I was also pursuing my major. I had designs on being the world's greatest sports broadcaster. I thought about starting low and then maybe getting up to the greatest sportscaster, you know, the world had ever known. And so I was a radio and television major at Arkansas State. It's now about a year and a half, almost 2 years later, 1980-81, that school year. And I was in the radio and television building, and there were two twin brothers who were walking down the hallway, and they saw me, and I saw them, and they started to slow down, and they asked me to stop, and I stopped, and they said, Are you saved? And I said, Yes, I am. I said, About 2 years ago. And they said, Well, that's wonderful. We want to give you something to listen to. And I said, Great, what is it? And it was a cassette tape. Now, some of you young boys, cassette tape is just about like this, two holes in the middle, and you put it in a cassette recorder, and somebody's voice comes out. And so they gave it to me, this little cassette tape, and they said, There's this fella who is a preacher out in California, and we used to go to this church, and now we're back because one of those brothers was doing a master's degree in filmmaking. And that's why they were in the radio and television building. And they said, You need to take this cassette tape and go up to your dorm room and listen to this guy preach out of Matthew 7, a message called Empty Hearts and Empty Words by John MacArthur. So I listened to that. I went up to the dorm room. I listened to that. And I could not believe the articulateness and the power of the preaching of God's Word. Never heard anything expositional in my whole life. I was going to church, but they weren't doing biblical exposition there. And so I asked these guys, I became friends with them, and I asked them, could you give me more tapes? And they said, yeah, you can sign up for what's called the tape lending library, and you can order 12 tapes at a time. You're listening to 12 tapes, and another order of 12 is coming in snail mail, and you'll always have this rotation. And so I began immediately to listen to everything I could possibly listen to on these cassette tapes, preaching of the book of Romans, preaching of the book of Ephesians, and I just couldn't listen enough. I finished my major. I graduated in the summer of 1982, and I didn't know exactly what I'd do. I thought maybe I might go on staff with Campus Crusade for Christ because of the impact that it had on my life, discipling young people. So I went out to staff training and looking, sort of trying to see if the Lord might have me disciple men on a college campus like I was discipled. And I hadn't made any commitments, but I went out to Fort Collins, Colorado. They, Campus Crusade, rented out the entire university for the summers, and they brought all of their staff persons to Fort Collins, and the old staff would be involved in meetings and whatnot, and the new staff were going through a process to see if they wanted to join. And they required of the new staff or potential staff 4 courses that you had to sit through, and it was the first time I'd ever sat in a formal theology study or a formal Bible study with didactic teaching occurring. And the first class that I had was on the Old Testament, and they would bring in professors or teachers from somewhere around the U.S. that they had a relationship with, and the first ever course that I had was on the Old Testament. I knew nothing virtually about the Old Testament, even after about 2.5, almost 3 years, maybe 3.5 years at the most of reading the Bible. I knew very, very little about the Old Testament. It was mysterious and challenging for me to understand all of that history. And so I'd read it, but I would need an interpreter. I need somebody to help me. So I walked into this Old Testament class. I sat down, and the teacher was none other than Dr. Walter Kaiser. He was the teacher selected. He was a professor of Old Testament at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Chicago, Illinois area. And he was so infectiously in love with the Old Testament. He was funny. His pedagogical skills, his teaching skills were top flight. And he had just written a book called Toward an Old Testament Theology a couple of years prior, and he signed it for me, and he had some required reading out of that book, and I read every bit of it. I absolutely did not understand one word of what he'd written. It was way, way over my head. And so I was trying to figure that out, but I listened to him carefully. And he was infectiously in love with the Old Testament, and it was very apparent. And he'd say, the Old Testament is 78% of our Bibles. You ought to get to know it. Selah. Let's move on. He was funny. He was glib. He made it interesting. He talked about the Bible stories. It came alive. And I said, I think I want to do that. I think I want to know the Old Testament like that. I think I want to be able to teach it like that. I didn't know what I was saying. I knew about seminaries, but maybe 2 or 3 of them, Trinity, Dallas, Talbot Seminary in California, and it was somewhat, you know, dispensational and theological orientation, but that's kind of all I knew. And so I took the opportunity to just begin to study with Dr. Kaiser and a couple of others in that summer, and I thought, I need to go to seminary. So I didn't know where to go and who to talk to, and so I talked to a brother who was an associate pastor of a church and that I'd gone to, and then he became the pastor of his own church, and I met with him over a weekend, and he said, why don't you go with me? I'm going to drop you off. I got to go on the other side of Memphis. I'm going to drop you off at Mid-America Baptist Theological Seminary in Memphis, and you go in there, and you tell them you want to enroll. And I said, okay. And so I went there, and I was just doing what I was told. And I went in, and I talked to the registrar and said, I know classes apparently have begun, but I'd like to go here and sit in and learn the Old Testament and take classes? They said, yes, you're right. Classes have already begun. You're late and we don't know you, and fill out this paperwork and take today and sit in some of these classes and see what you think, and then come back and talk to us. And by that time, we'll look over your application and we'll give you a word. So I did that, went to two or three classes, came back at the end of the day, and I said, yeah, I'd like to come here and study. And they said, you're accepted. You'll start tomorrow. And I could have been an axe murderer. I mean, they didn't know who I was. I'm not an axe murderer, but I could have been. Played one on television. And so I was first year seminary student right after I graduated from college, and I was learning the Old Testament. But I had also been listening to those tapes, and I'd heard so many messages by then from John MacArthur that I thought, I wonder what it would be like to go out to California and be a part of Grace Church. He was preaching through Ephesians. I'd heard a lot of personal references about how this applies to Grace Community Church. And so on June 1st of 1983, I packed up my car as a single man, put all my earthly belongings there, which wasn't much, and I drove to Los Angeles, California, and I transferred to Talbot Theological Seminary. It's the only other school I knew there on the West Coast. John MacArthur had attended there. I thought, should be good enough for me. And I immediately got a job on campus security on the campus of Biola University, of which Talbot is a graduate school. So I transferred after 1 year at Mid-America. I went to Talbot, and then I started immediately. I became a member of Grace Community Church and started immediately to be involved. I did anything anybody told me to do. I met a man named Jim George, who was teaching at Talbot, but he was also on the staff of Grace Church, and his wife, Elizabeth George, who is the Christian woman's author, began to disciple me, did Jim, and I met my wife, Beth, who was Jim's secretary at Talbot Seminary. And Liz began to disciple her, and I met her, I started to date her, and on our third date, I said, I think we need to get married. And she said, I agree. So 7 weeks later, I introduced myself to her mother in a little place called Grimes, Iowa, outside of Des Moines, Iowa. Met her and said, can I marry your daughter? And she said, yes. So I brought Beth back to California, put her in an apartment. And in October 25th of 1986, I married Beth Ballantyne. And earlier in February of that year, I was working campus security, but I was involved a lot at Grace Church, and John MacArthur asked me if I would be willing to become his personal assistant on the staff of the church. And so I agreed to do that, and I did whatever I was told, and I became his assistant at age 25. And I've said to him for many years after that, what were you thinking? And he said, I saw something there. I saw something in you that I liked, and I knew you could do the work. So I ended up being on staff and being the senior associate pastor of the church for 10 years, from 1986 to 1996. And it was time after 10 years for me to become the senior pastor of my own church. And so, being an Arkansas boy, the Bible Church of Little Rock knew who I was. They called me, and they said, our pastor is leaving to go pastor in Alabama. His name is Steve Lawson. He's been here 14 years. He's leaving to go to Mobile, Alabama, and we'd like to talk to you. So we talked for a long time, and that's where I met Curtis Thomas of the Five Points of Calvinism fame, because he was the senior associate pastor there. And so we developed our friendship, and I pastored there for 15 years, from 1996 to 2011. John MacArthur called me back. We had kept in touch, had been on some boards, Master's College and Seminary and Grace to You boards, and We kept in contact, saw each other quite frequently, and he asked me to come back to start the ministry called Grace Advance, which was designed to either train guys to start or revitalize local churches. So I did that, and there was a place where we were living, about 50 minutes away from Grace in Ventura County, that desperately needed a local church that was doing biblical exposition and had a biblical philosophy of ministry and its church life and dynamic. And so we started a church in Thousand Oaks, California. That's about 45 minutes south of Santa Barbara. And I was there for 7 years pastoring that church, still involved with John and the ministry there, but pastoring my own church. And that's bringing us up to speed with my wife being diagnosed with the cancer on December 7th of 2017. And we were having all kinds of children, and the Lord was kind to give us children who are in the faith. And the Lord has blessed. We have 15 grandchildren, and the Lord has probably blessed me, I think, more than anything else outside of my family and ministry, the kinds of relationships with these dear brothers, Joel Beakey, Jim Eliff, Jerry Marcelino, and a score of others who have been an inestimable privilege of knowing them, learning from them, and trying to be an encouragement to them. So the Lord has really, really blessed this poor Arkansas boy from the Mississippi Delta region, and I am so grateful that he chooses to use me to be a part of his kingdom and to influence others in the faith. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.